If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, my guest speaker in the studio, shedding some light on some of the rules of impure substances based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, would you please tell our audience about the Sharia law and Islamic law or rule concerning the following question, in three parts, of course.
from the point of view of purity or impurity.
Yes.
What's the rule regarding the vomit of a breastfed child?
Mm.
And also of a breastfed child that is also fed some supplementary diet. And then also, what's the rule regarding the vomit of an adult?
Well, the vomit of an adult, someone, a child or an adult, throws up,
mm-hmm.
is not necessarily impure. It's not impure in the first place, because it's the food that comes out of the mouth, and it's not mixed with blood, not mixed with anything that is essentially impure. So it is food with some kind of liquid, and that's not impure. So whatever it is, the food that a child throws up, a breastfeeding child, or an adult, that is not impure. So there's nothing, there's no doubt about it, even though it is a kind of something, let's say, disgusting. It's not something you like it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not impure at all.
I see. Okay. In an Islamic country, you might face some salespeople.
Yes.
All right. That, they might have a different religion, of course, or their religion is unknown.
Yes.
Well, and they sell some food items while they're wet.
Sure.
Okay. So is it obligatory to ask them about their religion, or, will the principle of presuming a state of purity apply here?
Mm-hmm.
And does it make a difference if we are talking about another country, like a non-Muslim country?
Yes, that's a very good question. Well, it's not obligatory to ask about someone's religion. If he is not Muslim, it's not necessary to ask him whether he is, let's say, a Buddhist, a Christian, or a Jew. Because according to His Eminence, the principle of presuming the state of purity will be applicable to such a person. And of course, he is considered to be pure as long as you do not know that he is actually one of those people who is essentially impure. Because it's very much likely that he might be one of the people of the book. According to all religious authorities, the people of the book, Ahl al-Kitab, are pure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always permissible to interact with them, to take food from them, and to eat from their food as long as their food does not contain meat and animal ingredients.
And there are many factors involved, by the way. We are not talking about meat, by the way.
Yeah.
Because the meat could not be slaughtered in the ritual way.
Yeah, the meat is haram to eat.
Yes.
If it comes from a Christian or from a Jew.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the food that does not contain meat, of course, then you don't have to investigate. You can eat the food that comes from a Christian, from a Jew, and from the people of the book.
Not even the kosher meat.
Kosher is something else. Kosher is also haram. It's mm-hmm. haram because it's not slaughtered according to Islamic law. Though in some way, in some procedures, they follow the same method that we follow when it comes to slaughtering that, mm-hmm. the sheep or the animal.
Yes.
But we cannot eat kosher because the person who slaughtered the animal is not Muslim. He did not recite takbir.
Yes.
He did not slaughter the animal in the direction of Qibla. And there are many conditions missing.
I see. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was a good answer to these questions. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/Ian. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawid, my guest speaker. And the topic we are delving into is some of the laws related to impure substances based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Tawid, you know, we all know that not all of the members of the family are the same.
Yes.
And some members of the family might not be that careful when it comes to the rules of purity, right?
Yes.
And, there are family visits, and when some of these members of the family, should pay visits to the other members of the family or to the same household, then, some furnitures could be made impure, to the extent that it is not possible, to wash or clean them.
Yes.
So in such cases, what's the duty, what's the religious law, when it comes to the residents of that house? And how is it possible for the other members of the family to remain pure, to remain clean, especially in the state of, for example, prayers? We all know that some of the, conditions for offering a prayer is the necessary condition of purity of
sure.
the place for the prayers to be accepted or for their validity, right?
Yes.
So what's the rule in this regard?
Well, it is not necessary to purify the house because it's sometimes very much difficult to do so. And the purity of the clothes of the person praying and the place of the place of the resting of the forehead during prayer is sufficient for the validity of the prayer. Because it's said that if you are praying, the place where you stand may be najis, but it is dry. But the place where you are going to prostrate, the place of sajda, if it is pure, then that's enough. Even though you know that the house is impure and the people, let's say, inside the house, the family members, they do not observe the rules of tahara, and you know the furniture and everything is very much likely to be impure. But as long as the place of sajda is pure, then you don't have to worry. And in such cases, when you, for example, happen to visit a relative who does not exercise precaution in matters of tahara, it's always recommended that you perform your prayer on a prayer mat, because that will make you sure that you have not stood on an impure place. And the place where you do the prostration, the sajda, is also pure. So in order to rest assured that you are actually, that you are observing the rules of tahara and that everything that you do is based on purity, then it's very much recommended that you pray on a prayer mat. Or if there's no prayer mat, at least you can actually use some other things which you are sure to be clean.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Tawid. And thank you very much, my dear listener, for joining us on Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, signing off.
جميل وهاب لطيف الظاهر والباطن.